Iran's President Raisi and Armenian Prime Minister Pashinyan highlight the need for sustainable peace and security in the Caucasus region. Russia says it's considering further steps in response to an attack on Nord Stream undersea gas pipelines, which Moscow blames on London. And police in South Korea admit their crowd control tactics on the night of the Halloween tragedy weren't enough. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Welcome. President Ibrahim Raisi has stressed Iran's stance that a dispute between Armenia and Azerbaijan in the Caucasus region should be resolved by regional players. Raisi was speaking on a joint presser with visiting Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan after the two held talks on expanding bilateral ties. The president added that any foreign interference in the Caucasus will only add to regional problems. Raisi said that peace and security in the region is of prime significance for Iran. He also talked about bilateral relations with Armenia. Raisi said that achieving the target trade of $3 billion with Armenia is possible if Tehran and Yerevan show determination. Pashinyan also echoed Raisi on the need for sustainable peace and security in the Caucasus region. Iran has slapped sanctions on 10 American officials and four entities over human rights violations and supporting terrorism. Here are some of those blacklisted individuals.
General Michael Eric Kurilla, commander of U.S. Central Command. Lieutenant General Gregory Gillett, deputy commander of U.S. Central Command. Scott Dozermu, commander of U.S. Airbase in Erbil. Anne Neuberger, Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emerging Technology. Major General Isaac Johnson, Jr., Commander of U.S. Army Civil Affairs and Psychological Operations Command.
The Foreign Ministry says that targeted individuals and entities interfered in Iran's internal affairs, instigated violence and riots, and committed economic terrorism against the Iranian nation. Those on the blacklist include a U.S. Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, the CIA, and the U.S. National Guard. Over the past few weeks, the United States and its Western allies have imposed several rounds of sanctions on Iran over what they call crackdown on anti-government protests. Iran has dismissed the allegation and says it's dealing with foreign-backed rioters. The U.S. Special Envoy for Iran says that Washington will resort to military action if necessary to prevent the Islamic Republic from obtaining a nuclear weapon.
Now, there are other tools, sanctions, pressure, and yes, as the president has said, if all other means fail as a last resort, he would keep the military option very clearly on the table if that's what it would take to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon.
The Malis dialed up anti-Iran rhetoric and military threat while speaking at an event organized by an American think tank, Carnegie Endowment. It clarified that there has been no movement on Washington rejoining the Iran nuclear deal since late August or early September. It said that the U.S. will not waste time on a deal if nothing is going to happen. The 2015 deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, was left in tatters after Washington withdrew from it in 2018 and reinstated sanctions on Tehran. Talks to revive the JCPOA began in April last year between Iran and the remaining signatories, with the U.S. participating indirectly. But the talks were stalled over what Iran called U.S. excessive demands. Russian President Vladimir Putin has held a trilateral summit with leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan, and that's in the wake of tensions between the two ex-Soviet neighbors. In a joint statement, Baku and Yerevan agreed not to use force to resolve their dispute over the Nagorno-Karabakh region. Our correspondent has more from Moscow.
Russian President Vladimir Putin hosted the leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan in an attempt to help the two ex-Soviet states settle their long-standing conflict. Putin said he's hopeful that the summit will make it possible to outline steps to resolve the Nagorno-Karabakh issue, adding the Armenian leadership has the political will to resolve the conflict with Azerbaijan. Putin, however, noted Moscow does not impose anything on anyone and only offers a peaceful solution.
I know that you have the political will for this, and we support it in every possible way. We must find the key points that will allow us to move forward. This conflict has been going on for decades, so we still need to end it sometime.
Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan reacted to Putin's remarks, voicing his readiness to accept Moscow's offer to establish diplomatic relations with Baku. Azerbaijan President Ilham Aliyev also said that the Karabakh conflict has already become history and it is time to talk about the normalization of relations between Yerevan and Baku. He expressed gratitude to Russia for trying to resolve the issue. Some experts believe the U.S. and some European countries, particularly France, are trying to foment discord between Armenia from Russia, reform their friendly relations to hostility, withdraw Armenia from the CSTO, and encourage Yerevan for a new large-scale military conflict with Azerbaijan.
France is actively intervening in the conflict. NATO's interests are visible behind it. The USA is one of its largest embassies in Yerevan, the same with Azerbaijan. There goes Israel and the UK. The latter is one of Turkey's closest friends. Another bloc of countries is being formed there, but they all work in the same direction. They are opposed to the participation of Iran and Russia in resolving this conflict and are trying to replace the participation of neighboring states with that of Western ones. This deprives the people of Armenia and Azerbaijan of a peaceful solution.
A six-week war between Azerbaijan and Armenia in 2020, which claimed the lives of more than 6,500 troops on both sides, ended with a Russian brokered deal that saw Yerevan cede swathes of territory that it had controlled for several decades. Last month, 286 people from both sides were killed in the flare-up of new clashes.
Moscow's task is to find ground for a compromise. The interference of Turkey, France, Britain and the United States in the Armenian-Azerbaijani relations in recent months, the so-called Western Peace Project may simply threaten the disappearance of Nagorno-Karabakh. Most experts believe the mediation of such countries is a trap from which there is no way out. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Russia says it's considering further steps in response to what it claims of Britain's involvement in attacks on Nord Stream gas pipelines in September.
We also have information that Britain is involved in the sabotage against Nord Stream, or speaking Russian, the act of terrorism, in regards to vital energy infrastructure, and what's more, not Russian. It's very important to note that, but international energy infrastructure.
Peskov stressed that those actions against the gas pipeline should not be left unanswered. Britain's already denied Russian allegation. It says that Moscow is trying to, quote, distract from its military failures in Ukraine. Russian Defense Ministry said that British Navy personnel had been involved in attacks on its Black Sea fleet and Nord Stream explosions. Massive leaks and unprecedented damage to the pipelines were detected on September 26th. Russia and several European countries called the incident an act of sabotage. Later, Moscow accused Western countries of not allowing it to participate in the probe into the explosions. Now, Moscow extending a previous evacuation order in the Russia-controlled regions near Kherson as Ukrainian forces advance to recapture the southern city. Russian-installed officials say that evacuation order for civilians has expanded to 15 kilometers along the eastern bank of Dnipro River. Ukraine calls the move forced deportation of civilians, which amounts to a war crime. Russia says that evacuations are to protect civilians as Ukraine is preparing for a massive missile strike on a strategic hydroelectric plant in the region. It also accuses Ukraine of planning to use unconventional weapons. Russia captured the Kherson region in the early days of its military offensive. Kherson, along with three other regions, integrated into the Russian Federation following referendums in September. The Eurozone inflation has hit a record high again this month amid growing fears of recession and an energy crisis fueled by the war in Ukraine. We've discussed that issue in our News Review program. Eurozone inflation soaring again to hit a record high this month, that amid growing fears of recession and energy crisis fueled by the war in Ukraine. According to data from Eurostat, consumer prices jumped by nearly 1% to 10.7% in October. That's driven by the rise in energy and food prices. The European Central Bank has been increasing rates to offset the soaring inflation, but a policy has failed to curb the surge in recent months. And that amid fears that a monetary policy would force the Eurozone economy into recession. Now, to get some insight on this, I'm inviting a couple of guests. Our correspondent, Jerome Hughes, is joining me from Brussels. Also with us is Greg Simons, who's a researcher with the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies in Uppsala, Sweden. Good to see you, gentlemen. Now, Jerome, pretty bad situation there in terms of economy. Tell us what measure is the EU taking, the central bank, as I just said, it's not been able to stop this soaring inflation. So what's going to happen next?
That's right. Well, the efforts by the European Central Bank, there's no doubt they have failed. And you have business and consumer confidence is going rock bottom. More economists that you speak to are saying that we are heading for a deep recession, because if they can't bring down inflation, if they can't bring down inflation by raising interest rates, then what more can they do? And secondly, it's just growing pressure on ordinary households, because the cost of living isn't coming down, and yet their rents are going up when landlords pass on interest rate hikes to their mortgages. And people who have their own mortgage, of course, it's going up every month. They've raised interest rates now at their last three meetings, the ECB, by 2%, which is an enormous hike. Three-quarters of 1% was the last rise. They're meeting again on the 15th of December to increase rates again. But really, with the demand on energy, the main thing driving inflation is energy and the sanctions against Russia, trying to cut Russia off. And with demand for energy set to go up during the winter months, we're set to see inflation keep going up as well. And how are unions? A couple of days ago, I was speaking to your colleague Bardia, talking about the fact that, you know, unions will be coming out and will be calling for strikes because wages are not keeping up with inflation. Mm-hmm. Well, since then, for example, here in Belgium, the police have agreed to go on strike, one-day strike action on the 9th of November in 10 days' time. All police stations will be closed. And the firefighters here in Belgium are going on strike in December. We don't know the date yet. And, you know, we've seen strikes here in terms of anti-austerity strikes and protests where you had more than 100,000 workers on the streets. And I think that's where we're heading during the winter months, when we see prices keep going up and people being unable to repay their home loans, etc. I think we're going to see huge numbers on the streets, not here, obviously, just in Belgium, but right across the 27 members of the European Union.
Well, naturally. Now, Greg, as Jerome put it rightly, you know, Europe is grappling with a plethora of issues, and that has been there even before the Ukraine war. Now, to what extent, let's say, is this Ukraine war contributing to the further worsening of the EU in terms of economy?
Well, I mean, you have the convergences of two man-made stupidities, essentially. Everyone seems to focus on the Ukraine war and how that contributes, but few remember that this already began before the war. And what was beginning before the war was this adherence to this green ideology that is reducing fuels and sources of energy, traditional ones, for so-called green energy, but not having the capacity to keep the supply for the demand, which is necessary. So this was already beginning before the war. And that was owing to the ideology. But if we look at what's happening now, it's because Europe isn't acting like a sovereign political entity. They're doing the US bidding. They're engaging as objects in the United States' economic war. I mean, currently against Russia, and possibly soon they're going to join in on China as well, which is just going to exacerbate things even more.
Okay. And Greg, you know, in the middle of all these strikes, industrial action, and, you know, protest rallies that are being held in different parts of Europe, the cost of living crisis in the UK, problems in France and Belgium, elsewhere in Europe, is there a way out of this? And this war is also going on, and the winter is approaching, energy prices are going higher. So what's the way out of this?
Ultimately, the way out, which is not realistic, considering who is so-called political leadership of Europe at the moment, but the way out of it would be to act in one's own national interests and not to do Washington's bidding in these economic wars, mm-hmm. because they're absolutely against national interest. And, I mean, this has been proven, and it's going to be proven even more concretely. I mean, as your other speaker said, I mean, winter is coming up. It's been mild so far, but it's not going to get any better. And if they join in on China, then there's not going to be much left of European economies.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Jerome Hughes in Brussels, Greg Simons in Uppsala. Welcome back. Let's move on with the rest of this newscast. South Korea promising a speedy inquiry into the recent Halloween crush in capital Seoul in an attempt to calm public anger over the deadly incident. In a parliamentary address, Interior Minister Lee Sang-min apologized to the public and pledged to make sure that such disasters won't happen again. His faced fierce criticism for stating the deployment of more police would not have prevented the tragedy. The police chief also acknowledged the police missteps that contributed to the incident.
We found out that there were lots of 112 calls before the accident about the seriousness of the place. The calls were about the emergencies telling the danger and urgency of the situation that large crowds had gathered before the accident occurred. However, we think the police response to the 112 calls was inadequate.
Authorities say that they had no guidelines to handle the expected large crowd. South Korea is observing a seven-day mourning period. The stampede took place as people marked their first mask-free Halloween in 3 years. They were crushed after those at the top of a sloped alley fell over others. The incident has killed 156 people. The dead are from South Korea and 14 other countries. Scores of more people were also injured, almost 30 of them critically. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the position of ethics in the Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the position of ethics in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic text, we see that in Islam, the first and foremost thing which is important, and the Quran has emphasized on it is about the ethics and self-perfection. How to purify ourselves, our souls. This is very important. Why? Because when we look at the human being, when we look at the humans or a man, we see that Allah has made him out of two things. Number one, which is the most important, is the soul of this person, which will travel from this material world to the hereafter. The other thing is the body. And generally we see that we give importance to the body and we forget about our soul, whereas the tahzeebun nafs, the purification of the soul, is related to the soul. Whereas the ethics, it is related to the soul. Yes, it is related to the body, but obviously it has effect, a positive and direct effect with the soul, and it is connected with the soul, because when we are living a life in which we are ethical, we are someone who deals with the people nicely, and we are in the parameters of the ethics, then obviously others also communicate with us in the same way. And this shows that how this shows the personality of the person. Therefore, it is important, because Islam has given importance to this issue. And when we even look at the Quran, we see that Allah has said, "Innaka la'ala khuluqin azim." He said about the Prophet that indeed you are at the extreme level of the goodness and the ethics. So you have been created as someone who is a role model. Therefore, it is necessary to give importance to the ethics in the Islamic lifestyle. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the position of ethics in the Islamic lifestyle. Well, when we look at the Quran, we see that, for example, in chapter Jum'ah, which we recite every Jum'ah, or every Friday, in the chapter Jum'ah or Friday, it is mentioned in the second verse, the reason of the prophets, why the prophets are raised amongst these nations, amongst the people. And there Allah says, هو الذي بعث, he is who, Allah is the one who has raised, فِي الْأُمِّيِّينَ رَسُولًا, he has raised amongst the people, amongst the ummi, the rasul, a prophet from them, مِنْهُمْ يَتْلُوا عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتِ. What is the duty of this prophet? Is to recite the verses for these people, to tell them about the message of God, to convey the message of God. وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ. Now this is important. Tazkiyah is to purify them. It is to purify them. So his duty is to teach them through the verses of the Quran how to be a good person, to teach them the ethics. And once he has taught them, then yuzakkihim, he has to practically make them purify. And he has to purify them. وَيُعَلِّمُهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةَ. And after they have get the purification, once they have the good ethics, then he will teach them the knowledge of book and wisdom to them. Therefore, in order to gain the knowledge of book and wisdom, in order to have the knowledge, purification is the first step. that we need to gain. So it is important for a Muslim having a Muslim or Islamic lifestyle to purify himself, to have a good ethics, to make himself someone who can absorb the light of knowledge in him. And therefore, it is important. And that's why Islam has given importance to the akhlaq or the ethics and tahzibun nafs, which is purification of the soul, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
In the limelight.
No doubt, Palestinians are the only owners of the land of Palestine, which is partly occupied by the fabricated regime of Israel. The Zionist regime, which is after ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, is now working to expel Palestinians from Masafer Yatah in the West Bank by making living conditions for its residents intolerable. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. Electronic Intifada wrote, a prominent Israeli human rights group is calling on Karim Khan, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, ICC, to urgently intervene to prevent the expulsion of Palestinians from a rural area of the West Bank. In a letter delivered recently, Betzalem requested Khan's urgent intervention to prevent the Zionist regime from continuing to carry out this policy, and to clarify that forcible transfer constitutes a war crime under the Rome Statute, the founding treaty of the International Criminal Court. The Zionist regime seeks to expel some 1,000 Palestinians from Masafer Yatta in the West Bank's South Al-Khalil Hills by making the conditions they live in so unbearable they are forced to leave the area they have lived in for generations, Betzalem states in his letter. While these efforts have been underway for decades, the Zionist regime has recently massively stepped them up in scope, severity, and frequency. Those efforts were accelerated after the Zionist regime's high court rejected a legal challenge to the plans to turn the area into the military training zone. One of the Israeli regime judges who issued the verdict is a settler who was born in the UK and lives in a Jewish-only colony in the West Bank built in violation of international law. Ariel Sharon, then Zionist regime's agriculture minister, admitted in 1981 that the area was declared a firing zone for the purpose of displacing Palestinians from their land so it may be seized by the Israeli regime. The High Court's ruling in May concluded 2 decades of challenges mounted by Palestinians in Masafer Yatta. Since 2006, the fabricated regime of Israel destroyed nearly 70 residential structures in these communities that were home to 355 people, 175 of them minors, according to Betzalem. The group has also documented the demolition of 32 non-residential structures in these communities. Violence by Jewish settlers also serves the regime's aim of pushing Palestinians off their land in Masafer Yatta. Betzalem states, Jewish settlers physically assault Palestinian shepherds and use their land, sabotage water sources and enter homes, among other violent acts with full state backing and an often active participation of Israeli soldiers and police. According to Betzalem, since the High Court ruling earlier this year, life for Palestinian residents has become a nightmare. The Zionist regime's aim, the rights group says, is to make Palestinian lives miserable enough. So they will leave their homes and land, and the state will take over the area. The Zionist regime has conducted military training exercises involving tanks and live fire in the area. The military has confiscated vehicles and imposed roadblocks hindering Palestinians in the rural area from accessing nearby population centers. Betzalem said soldiers at roadblocks make it difficult and often outright prevent access to humanitarian agencies, human rights organizations, activists, journalists, and diplomats. An intervention by Khan's predecessor, Fatou Bensouda, is believed to have discouraged the Zionist regime from destroying Khan al-Ahmar, a Bedouin community in the West Bank. Bensouda warned the Zionist regime in 2018 that the planned eviction of Khan al-Ahmar would constitute a war crime. Despite this warning, several lawmakers pledged to destroy the village while campaigning for votes during the Zionist regime's last general election. Before her term as ICC chief prosecutor ended last year, Bensouda opened a formal investigation into war crimes in the West Bank and Gaza Strip amid fierce opposition and hostility from the Zionist regime and the U.S. Israel's settlement enterprise in the West Bank is likely a primary focus of the ICC investigation. The Israeli regime's officials responsible for executing policy in Masafer Yatab may be treated as suspects by the court, which tries individuals rather than states. According to Betzalem, those responsible include the Israeli regime's prime minister, war minister, military chief of staff, and the high court judges who legally sanctioned the policy. Even though the ICC opened an investigation in Palestine last year, international justice remains an uphill battle. Palestinian human rights groups have expressed frustration that since the beginning of his term as chief prosecutor last June, Khan, Britain's nominee for the post, the ICC investigation in Palestine, hasn't moved forward. The chief prosecutor, who was nominated for his post by the UK, which also opposes the ICC investigation in Palestine, has made no public statement according to Israeli regime recently banning and raiding offices of Palestinian human rights groups that have submitted evidence files to the court on behalf of victims. During his visit to Al-Quds in July, U.S. President Joe Biden affirmed that Washington would work with Tel Aviv to combat all efforts to boycott or delegitimize Israel, to deny its right to self-defense, or to unfairly single it out in any forum, including at the United Nations or International Criminal Court, Biden claimed. Also, the website of Palestine Chronicle wrote, Israeli human rights group Betzalem has called on the International Criminal Court ICC prosecutor Karim Khan to urgently intervene to stop Israel from evicting Palestinians from their homes and land in Masafer Yatab, the official Palestinian news agency Wafa reported. Israeli regime authorities are planning the eviction of some 1,000 Palestinian inhabitants of Masafer Yatab, a rural area located south of Al-Khalil in the occupied West Bank, in order to create a military firing zone for Israeli regime occupation forces. 8 villages, including 4 schools, clinics, and hundreds of other structures in the area, are slated for demolition. The fabricated regime of Israel has been trying to drive these communities out for decades, but has recently escalated its actions in scope, severity, and frequency following the May 2022 ruling by the Zionist regime's Supreme Court. The ruling, which contravened international law provisions and basic moral principles, reached the conclusion that the residents have no right to live on the land and there is no legal impediment to expelling them. Israel has made the residents' lives a nightmare. They suffer daily threats by soldiers and settlers to their bodies and property, as well as noise and pollution hazards, routine damage to infrastructure, incessant invasion of their privacy, and constant uncertainty over their future, said Betzalem in a statement. The statement added, Israel is also working to cut these small communities off from their surroundings, with the military placing roadblocks, confiscating cars, and hindering activists, journalists, and diplomats from accessing the area.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
Ya Mawlaya, فكيف يبقى في العذاب وهو يرجو ما سلف من حلمك أم كيف تؤلمه النار وهو يأمل فضلك
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this part of the Divine Kumail supplication. Imam Ali alayhi salam in this part says, Ya Mawlai,
فكيف يبقى في العذاب وهو يرجو ما سلف من حلمك؟ My protector, so how should he remain in the chastisement while he has hope for your previous clemency? أم كيف تؤلمه النار وهو يأمل فضلك ورحمتك؟ So how should the fire cause him pain while he expects your bounty and mercy? أم كيف يحرقه لهيبها وأنت تسمع صوته وترى مكانه؟ Or how should its flames burn him while you hear his voice and see his place? As we concluded in the previous episodes, the Quranic verses and traditions imply that Almighty Allah has mercy upon all the servants. He has put the key to salvation and treasures of his mercy in the hands of all the servants. It is accessible for everyone, but not everyone wishes to possess these keys to open the treasuries of Almighty Allah's mercy. We said that Imam Ali alayhi salam says, supplication is the key of mercy, and this important key sometimes is ignored. With reference to the verse of the Holy Quran that says, whatever mercy Allah unfolds for the people, no one can withhold it, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said, the mercy implies the prayer and dua. So this verse says, whatever kind of dua Allah unfolds for the people, no one can withhold it. In other words, supplication is the key by which Allah opens the doors of His mercy for the people and which He has placed in their hands. And this is what Imam Ali alayhi salam has been trying to teach us throughout this divine kumail supplication, and from the very beginning. We have seen two very important elements. First, the factor of hope and staying hopeful of Almighty Allah's mercy. And second, the factor of supplication, calling out to Him, turning our need to Him and no one else. In this regard, the Holy Prophet ﷺ says, for whosoever among you the door of prayer and dua is opened, the doors of response shall also be opened for him.
My Lord, then how could he remain in torment when he hopefully relies upon your past forbearance, compassion and mercy? And how can the fire cause him suffering when he hopes for your grace and mercy? And how can its roaring flames char him when you hear his voice and see his plight?
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, dear listeners, it is Allah that opens up towards His servants with prayer. And He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is the one who opens for Him the doors of its acceptance. Imam Ali alayhi salam says elsewhere, whoever knocks at the door of Allah the Glorious, it will be opened for him. Of course, as we have said many times and emphasized on, the point is that the supplicant, the believer, must be aware of the fact that supplication, calling out to the Lord, has got some specific etiquettes, and more importantly, some specific requisites that the supplicant needs to be aware of, needs to observe them. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is narrated to have said, supplicate frequently because it is the key of every mercy and the fulfillment of every need. and that which lies with Allah cannot be attained but through prayer and dua. A door which is frequently knocked at is likely to be opened for the one who knocks it. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, in this beautiful word, is teaching us one of these requisites, one of these etiquettes, to be more precise. Supplicate frequently. This means to be consistent in your supplication. This is what exactly going on with this person Imam Ali alayhi salam is describing in this part of the Kumaya supplication. وَأَنْتَ تَسْمَعُ صَوْتَهُ وَتَرَى مَكَانَهُ. The person is still hopeful, is still continuing. أَمْ كَيْفَ يَشْتَمِلُ عَلَيْهِ زَفِيرُهَا وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ زَعْفَهُ. Or وَهُوَ يَرْجُ مَا سَلَفَ مِنْ حِلْمِكَ. He is still hopeful of your previous clemency. وَهُوَ يَأْمُلُ فَضْلَكَ وَرَحْمَتَكَ. He still expects your bounty and mercy because you have shown, you have proved that you have this vast ocean of mercy. Imam Ali alayhi salam says elsewhere, prayer and dua is the key of fulfillment and the key of success. And the best prayer, that which emanates from a pure breast and a pious heart. Let us end our episode with a tradition from the Holy Prophet ﷺ that once said to the companions, "Shall I show you a weapon that will deliver you from your enemies and increase in your provision?" The companions said, "Indeed, Ya Rasulullah." And he said, "Supplicate your Lord day and night, because the weapon of a believer is supplication." Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. We ask the Almighty Allah to sit us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies: 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.